Ja Morant. So let's start with that. And the interview that he did with Jalen Rose last night, and then the league came down. And let's just start there. The league comes down with the 8-game suspension, but they're giving him credit for all the games that he's already missed. Now, this is, you know, suspended without pay, so it caused him a good chunk of pay, Marcus. But what are your thoughts on the 8-game suspension for Ja Morant?
Well, I don't know. I'm glad that he did the interview after they handed out the suspension, because the interview makes him look horrible. It makes him look like he's I don't know. Jalen Rose asked really good questions, and maybe he can't give out details of things that went on, but then why agree to do the interview? It just looks to me like there's no issue there. This rehab is pretty quick. I don't know. It could – maybe it's not alcohol, but it seems like that there has to be something more going on, because it's not a crime to possess a gun. I mean, it's a crime to do it in the way that he's done it and threaten people and, you know, have the situation go on with the Pacers and all those kind of things. But he had an explanation for everything, and I don't think there's an explanation for any of this.
Yeah, but see, I didn't think he had he had what he thought was an explanation. I didn't think any of it explained anything. I thought he was very dismissive of I didn't see them bring up the high school kid situation, but they did. Jalen Rose brought up the Indianapolis situation with the laser that they think was a laser sight on a gun. He did bring up the obviously the gun in the strip club, the video on TikTok or Instagram, whichever it was. And he did bring up the situation at the mall, at the shoe store. I didn't see him bring up the high school kid, but I thought he was very dismissive of all of them. And I didn't think that, and maybe he was told not to. It would be likely that there was probably an attorney somewhere nearby. But I didn't feel like he pushed back on Ja Morant's kind of brushing over some of that. Like, yeah, I've had some things going on, and I'm dealing with it, and everything's good, and I'm ready to go. Craig and I were talking about it. Neither one of us thought that he seemed very contrite in the apology that he gave.
Totally agree. And, you know, he talked about himself in the third person, said, I'm going to show everybody who Ja really is, what I'm all about, and all this. And then he described his decision to conduct the Instagram live session while partying at Shotgun Willie's, this strip club in Colorado. He said, as, quote, just pretty much trying to be free. And he talked about all this. You know, he's got to find a better way to handle stress and all this. I don't know. To me, he just didn't seem that contrite to me, guys.
Nope. I agree completely.
Yeah, I didn't think so at all. I thought in every instant he asked him about the gun. Whose gun was it in the video? He didn't want to answer that. And not that he would. I can understand that he may not want to get somebody else in trouble. But the issue is, to me, was not whose gun it was. It was the fact that every single one of these instances, all four of them have a gun involved in it. And that is a pattern of behavior that is not good for the league, and it's not good for Ja Morant.
Yeah, and I can understand if he doesn't want to say who it belonged to, but hopefully the league, in the interview to us, I can understand why he doesn't say it. Hopefully the league got to the bottom of it and found out who it belonged to, and more importantly, how it ended up in the hands of Ja Morant, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of questions. I don't know. I mean, and the team is saying that, okay, so he'd already missed 6 games. They said he's not going to necessarily, you know, start playing when he's eligible to come off the suspension, that he hadn't been working out at all and so forth. And that's the other thing on this. Even if you're in rehab or whatever, I mean, surely you could do a couple of hours cardio a day or something like that. I don't know.
I've never heard of a 7-day rehab. I mean, we've heard rumors that it was alcohol. We've heard rumors that it was emotional stuff. But whatever it was, clearly there was some sort of a problem. It was either this is an easy way to get people off my back, or he really is trying to deal with some things. And if he's really trying to deal with stuff, I don't know that 1 week in a facility is going to get you where you need to be.
Well, he's learned how to handle stress now, the anxiety breathing and so forth. He's talked to therapists. No, I'm totally with you, Brad. I'm totally with you. And
he's eligible to come back on Monday, right?
Well, yeah, he's eligible to. Now, they said, but they said it might be, you know, a few days after that, because he's got to ramp up and start working out again and, you know, have some work with the team, so they haven't really put a specific date on when he's actually going to come back. But the eight games, what Schefter gave the figure, but it's what, is it $600,000-$700,000, something like that? I mean, just in dollars that it cost him. But it cost him a whole lot more than that with everything that he's got going with Nike and endorsement companies that he represents, right?
I read that Powerade had pulled back, or Coca-Cola, who I think is the is the company that has Powerade, had pulled back on that campaign that they were doing with him. So I don't know if they were going to continue to pay him and postpone the push on that campaign, or if he's going to lose that money. But I guarantee you there's going to be potential endorsement money that he's going to lose out on if he does not seem more trustworthy than he has seemed in the last month or so.
So we'll see. Yeah, he's eligible to rejoin the Grizz on Monday, but they have already said he's not going to play that night at home against the Dallas Mavs. Needs to more time to get ready to return, because they said he wasn't working out at all during his time in Florida. So I don't know. To me, we're left with just as many questions as we had before the interview and before the rehab. But Mark, was it Mark Spears, guys, that had gone on Twitter and said, Instagram, whatever, social media, and said they wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play at all again for the rest of the year. And now it sounds like we might see him as early as next week at some point.
Yeah, it looks like we'll see him next week. Yeah.
So, okay, as far as on the court, and we'll get to the college basketball in a few minutes, but some very interesting games, a really interesting early game with the Sixers in Cleveland, and then, guys, the late game, just for sheer entertainment. I mean, this was just amazing as Steph Curry had the 50-point game of his career, 12 50-point games now, and this was about as good as it gets, the 20 for 28, knocking down the eight threes. But I was telling Matt that really I think the twos, some of the layups that he hit and shots in the lane and splitting defenders and falling down to the ground and throwing it up off the board, some of those shots were even more entertaining than the threes last night. But let's start with Steph, what you saw from him, Marcus.
Well, it was amazing, 50 points. That's a great game. Good win for the Clips and another loss for the Warriors on the road. And that will help propel the Clips, I think, potentially past the Warriors in the regular season standings. So, good win. It was a good night for the Thunder, too. Really good night for Oklahoma City with the losses by the Lakers and the T-Wolves.
Yeah, Boston beating the T-Wolves by two on the road. Brad, but back to the Clippers win over Steph Curry. It's just, we've talked about it, Brad. I mean, even though Steph Curry goes for 50, even though they shoot almost 56% as a team and over 47% from three, and it's still not enough to win. In fact, they lose by 8 points on the road at the Clippers, so now they've lost 9 straight road games, Brett.
Yeah, the Celtics squeezed out a win on the road last night, but the Warriors just cannot win on the road, and that's going to be a problem going into the playoffs for them, especially where they're probably going to be seeded. I don't know what they've got to do. I mean, I read a story yesterday that said that Wiggins may not be back, period, this year. Now, we've heard different rumors about what's going on with him, and I think that the assumption is that he won't be back at least until the postseason, and that's if he plays in the postseason. That's the only way I see them getting better, having to play games on the road, and that is going to be a major problem. But on Steph, I was thinking about this. I can't remember, you guys would know this probably better than me, he either came into the league the same year or a year before Russell Westbrook did.
Same year.
Year after. I mean, same as Harden. The year after.
Okay, Westbrook. Same as Harden. So it was a year after, but that's still
same draft as Harden.
My point is still relevant.
Right. Harden number three pick.
That's right. Yeah, same year as Harden. You're right.
What we talk about with guys at this point in their career and the kind of usage that he has had, and I know it's a different kind of usage than what Westbrook does, but the fact that this guy is this far into his career and he's still having games like he had last night is unbelievable, because that was not an exception. It wasn't like, oh, that's the only game that he's played like that this year. Now, he may not have played that spectacularly, but he's had games, a lot of games, where he's pumped a lot of points and carried that team. That's remarkable to me that at his age he can still play at that high of a level.
Yeah. His cardio, I mean, and they say that the training that the guy does, even when he missed all those games, they said he was working like a madman cardio-wise, because he is running all over the floor. unfortunately, he's having to run on the defensive end too. They just put him in one pick and roll after another, and just, you know, riddled him last night. And that's the thing, guys, is the Clippers, you know, they shot 47% from three and 48% and 81%. And the main thing is they got to the line at will. 32 free throw attempts to only 15 for Golden State. And, Marcus, that continues to be my question. This team is just not playing defense. And now Draymond picks up a tee. He's going to be gone for the next game. But the question is not can Steph and Clay and Jordan Poole shoot the ball. It's can they ever start playing defense? And they, for some reason on the road, they just don't do it.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with them on the road, but, you know, you could describe it as boredom with them this year. They weren't near as good of a defensive team last year as maybe they've been in the past, and I think some of that has to do with Klay Thompson on the perimeter. Jordan Poole doesn't give them as much defense. I think they miss Wiggins' athletic ability on that end of the floor some too. I really don't know how to explain it. I would think in the playoffs they've got a chance to turn it around some.
You know, the other takeaway for me from the game, Craig, from that specific game, was that Kawhi Leonard seems to be elevating back to where he can play when he wants to at the right time of the year. They're not going to be the number one seed, but they're going to be in a good position. And if he starts taking over games the way that he did at times last night in that game, Clippers are going to be tough in the playoffs.
He's had four 30-point games in his last eight games. Paul George didn't shoot it quite as well, but he was 4-for-9 from three. He had 24. And Westbrook had a game where he goes 7 assists, 0 turnovers, with 9 rebounds. He was getting huge offensive rebounds all night. And that's where they killed him on second-chance points, 27-11 on second-chance points. And Golden State had twice as many turnovers as the Clippers had. And the Clippers had 20 points off the Golden State turnovers. And so, you know, people were crying gloom and doom for the Clippers after, you know, the All-Star break and so forth. But I said at the time, I said, well, folks, I mean, they're without three start. One game they're without three starters and their sixth man, Norm Powell, who still hadn't come back. But like Big Z, he had 19 and 16 last night and is a far better defender, than Plumlee, who was playing at the time. Eric Gordon gave him 16 off the bench. He was huge in the third quarter where he had 14 points in one quarter. And Terrence Mann had 17 off the bench. And so they were hitting on all cylinders.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Marcus, I was thinking about you at the end of that OSU game because you said yesterday is a 5.5 point spread. Cowboys favored by 5.5, and you said it did go off at that, and they end up winning by 5 against Youngstown State in a game where Youngstown led most of the way. But the Cowboys took over in the final, 6 or 8 minutes of the game, led by as many as 8 points, looked like they were going to cover the spread, but then Youngstown was given a 3-point play on a play where they clearly traveled with the basketball. Turned out to be the difference. Cowboys win it, but they only win it by 5. So a bad beat there as they lose by 0.5 point.
Yeah.
On the spread.
Again, Oklahoma State, they played one of the worst first halves I've seen. They were terrible. But rallied in the second half. It was a tough spot. I don't think they have a lot to play for. I get to come back home and play the next game. But, they struggle shooting the basketball. Struggle.
Now, but will that next game be at home? Because the wrestling tournament is this weekend. Their next game, I think Pat said, is on Sunday. But On that Eastern Washington game, Matt, is that going to be in Stillwater or at Eastern Washington?
I haven't seen the answer to that. I don't know.
Okay. We'll look for that. But again, they might have to go on the road again. But remember, Eastern Washington beat Washington State, so that's going to be their next opponent. But yeah, Brad,
that's
something
if they got to travel all across the country to
that's a tough these low majors. You go from Ohio to Washington State. That's brutal.
Did you see, Mark, that they had Bob Stoops give a pep talk to the Youngstown State guys?
Was that over the phone or
on camera? Yeah, it had to be on FaceTime or something. Yeah, because I don't think that he was actually in Youngstown for the game, because he's got his own team to worry about right now. But yeah, he was trying to fire up the hometown guys.
Bob's all over the place, man. He's selling fences. He's coaching XFL football. He's got it going.
Okay, now Brad, we got to get your final four, Brad.
Okay, well I tried to be as true to what I thought as I could, but still be a little adventurous. So I'm going to give you my final four, which is, you know, we're going to have teams in the final four that are going to be some of the better teams. I got Alabama and Marquette, and I got Texas and KU. I got Bama beating Kansas for the whole thing.
All right, so Alabama, Marquette, that's a 1-2 on the left side of the bracket, and Texas and KU, so that's a 1-2 on that side of the bracket. And give us your finals again, and champ?
Bama versus Kansas, Bama winning it all.
So Kansas to the finals.
Okay. Yeah.
And I got Bama winning it all. And Marcus, you have Duke, right?
I got Duke, Texas, Creighton, and
– Texas. You got Texas going to – yeah, that's right.
Texas winning it over Duke. I've got Creighton and Connecticut in the final four.
And, wow. And Matt, for people that didn't hear yours in the first hour, Matt, your final four and champ?
I had Arizona beating Purdue in one semifinal. Don't ask me how I got to Purdue because I don't even believe myself on that. I have Kansas beating Texas in the other semifinal. I also find it very difficult to believe that two Big 12 teams would make the Final Four, but they're a very good conference, so maybe it'll happen. And I have Arizona beating Kansas by three. So I'm going with the Wildcats.
Matt even predicts the score. And I got Alabama, Duke, Texas, UCLA, Bama over Texas. So we got a lot of the same teams. I think a lot of us had Alabama, Texas, Duke, Brad, and Matt had Kansas, right? Marcus, did you have Kansas going to the Final Four?
No. Texas, no. Duke, Connecticut, and Creighton.
Yeah. Okay. Duke, Connecticut.
I knew you were big on Duke. I didn't know you were that big on Duke.
UConn. Okay, you had UConn there. Okay.
You got them going all the way.
Anyway, it's all getting underway. It's all underway right now. We'll keep you up to date as we go. What else, guys? NFL-wise, the Orlando Brown contract, guys. I mean, it's just incredible to me. Offensive lineman and not only the 4-year $64 million, Marcus, but 43.5 guaranteed, signing bonus of 31, and he's going to get 42.3 of that over the first 2 years. Good for Orlando Brown, huh?
That is really good for Orlando Brown. It's good for the Bengals, too. I think that the Bengals clearly need some offensive line help, and they need to protect Joe Burrow, their number one asset. I think that's incredibly important for them. They didn't run the ball well last year, so I think all of this helps with Orlando Brown.
Did we see the structuring of the deal? Like, is this a 4-year but it's a longer-term deal in terms of the payout? That seems like a lot of money that they're locking up. Not that they don't need it. I think that they do. But they know they're going to have to pay Joe Burrow. That seems like a lot of money, assuming that you're getting ready to break the bank for your quarterback.
It was 4 years, $64 million. The thing is, as they always are, right, guys, on these NFL deals, they're front-loaded because they can prorate the signing bonus over the length of the contract. So in this case, $31 million signing bonus, highest ever for an offensive lineman. Like, to give you an idea, Ted Karras that they signed last year, like Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, Lyle Collins, they had a combined signing bonus of $21 million.
Wow.
This was $31 million, just to one guy, $10 million higher than those other three combined, highest ever for offensive linemen. But that's the reason, right, Marcus, that they can prorate it over the length of the contract. So that's why this deal is paying him 42.3 over the first 2 years.
I mean, for a big guy, I don't know that you want to pay him that much, you know, up front. But yeah. Still, Cincinnati, not the destination for a lot of free agents. I don't know why Kansas City didn't want to re-sign him. Would have made sense for them to re-sign him. They went out and signed another tackle from Jacksonville, maybe just to kind of reduce their salary a little bit. But I think he's a good player. And Cincinnati probably had to pay a little bit of, you know, a little more to get him a little bit more of a tax.
Now, Mark, you talked a lot about Aaron Rodgers. A lot of this was coming down during your show yesterday, the Pat McAfee show and so forth. And I heard you and Ravis talking about it. Brad, what are your thoughts on what you heard from Aaron Rodgers yesterday?
Oh, I mean, it's not a big shock. I think we knew that it was a matter of when, not if, that this was going to happen. I do think it's interesting that there's a little bit of revisionism that's going on because he said that he's not been holding anybody up, but he also said that he had his decision made on Friday. So I mean, he was holding them up until Friday. So we're basically talking about 3 or 4 or 5 days.
I cannot believe you would accuse Aaron Rodgers of revising history.
I know.
I mean, this is a shocker.
I know that quarterbacks are playing longer and at a higher level than previously, and I know that he's a pretty healthy guy outside of the ayahuasca and the darkness retreat. But I don't know. It's a big gamble. I think it could wind up being all these historical parallels between the Brett Favre move between Green Bay and New York. I think this one could very easily wind up tracking the same way. We'll see. I think it's a lot of money to spend on a guy that's 39 years old and has been less than thrilled with his situation, I don't know, forever, maybe, if not for at least a decade. So we'll see how it plays out. But I don't think if it was my team, I don't think I would want them doing what they're going to wind up doing to get him.
Mark, will the Pack end up getting at least one number one for Rodgers?
I think they're going to have to give up whatever the Packers want to give them. I don't think the Packers give a rip. I mean, the Jets are the ones that fully committed in this. I mean, they're in no position.
Both teams have walked themselves into a corner on this deal. They've both shown their hands, and now we're trying to sort out the nuance of who's got the better hand.
Oh, no, I think this is absolutely the Packers got the better hand here. They're already paying Jordan Love. I mean, they're going to go on with him no matter what.
They have $59.465 million guaranteed. So, I mean, if they just say no deal and I don't know, Rodgers, he said yesterday that there were other teams that had expressed interest in trading for him. He didn't name the teams. Of course, the Raiders have already, you know, gone their way and signed Garoppolo, and other teams have moved on. But I'm just saying they still are, you know, on the line for over $59 million.
Okay, so their leverage is incredible until the day that that vests, whatever day that is. Is it June 1?
Yeah, the $58.3 million bonus is due no later than week one of the season.
Okay, well, there you go. The Packers can – I mean, if I'm with the Packers, I'm just kind of looking at you guys saying, hey, I mean, we're good. We want two ones. And that. So at some point, yeah, I think the Jets are going to have to pay because the Packers have the leverage. They can wait as that long. I mean, they can wait through training camp.
Yeah. Will the Jets ever figure it out?
No, they're one of those handful of bad franchises that
don't. I mean, it is unbelievable how in a team – you were just talking about Cincinnati paying a luxury tax to bring in the offensive lineman. New York is a city where you don't have to do that. You don't have to worry about that. They ought to be able to get any player that they want if they can structure the finances of it. Anybody would want to go to New York and play, and yet the Jets are so bad and they're so poorly run that it's completely the opposite. It's unbelievable to me that the Jets can't be any better than they've been.
Okay, let's just say they get the deal done and forget about mortgaging the future. Say Mark is right and they have to give up two number ones or whatever to get him. But for next season, if they get the deal done, yesterday Caesar said they were 14-1 to win the Super Bowl, only five teams ahead of them, Chiefs, 49ers, Bills, Eagles, Bengals. You guys agree with that, or it sounds like you might put the Jets down a little lower than number six in the league? What do you think, Marcus?
Lower.
I definitely have them lower, for sure lower.
Okay. They got a ton of talent there. I mean, I don't know for next year if they get him, I think they're definitely going to be a contender. You guys might be right. I'm not saying they're going to beat the Bills and win the division, But they had a darn good defense this year. And
if they were in the NFC, I'd probably feel differently about it. But the fact that they've got to play through that AFC, is I just don't see how they're going to be that much better this year. Their defense was really good. You can assume that their defense is going to be good again. I just don't know. I mean, their offense will be better. It has to be because it can't be any worse. But I just don't see them being that serious of a threat with Aaron Rodgers when you compare him to the other quarterbacks that are playing on teams in the AFC.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
USA Today gave us 15 players to watch for the NCAA tournament. I'll just run through the names, and I want you to give me three or four guys who are on your list. They started off with Max Asmus of ORU. They did it alphabetical order, but Marcus Carr of Texas, Zach Edey of Purdue, Kyle Filipowski of Duke, Keontae George of Baylor, Trace Jackson Davis of Indiana, Jaime Jaquez of UCLA, Tyler Kolak, Marquette, Brandon Miller, Alabama, Jamal Shedd, Houston, Jalen Slauson of Furman, Drew Timmy of Gonzaga, Oscar Tshiebwe of Kentucky, Azulis Tabellis of Arizona, and Jalen Wilson, Kansas. Mark, give us three or four guys on your list to watch for this weekend.
Man, that's a lot. I would say Jalen Wilson of Kansas is one that we're clearly used to around here. Arkansas got some good guys in their backcourt. Keegan Murray's little brother at Iowa will be a player to watch in that game today between Iowa and Auburn. That's a real big clash of styles between Iowa's ability to score and get into transition game and Auburn's desire to defense, to play defense. Instead of it, I think Colgate is a real interesting team. Their coach has a lot of run right now, and they shoot all kinds of threes, man. They move the ball around, and they'll take threes from all over the floor. I don't think that's going to work real good against Texas, but that'll be a fun game to watch.
Brad, any players you're interested in watching in particular?
The thing I love about the tournament is coming in and being surprised by guys that you weren't necessarily watching for. That being said, Miller from Alabama I think is unbelievable, even though things about him that I find bothersome. He's an unbelievable player. He's a machine, so I'm excited to watch him. Shedd at Houston. I'm curious to see if Houston can play through the tournament, if their regular season got them ready for the tournament. And then Drew Timmy. I want to see if Timmy can do it again without Chet Holmgren there and what Gonzaga does. But I always love the fact that there are guys that I don't have my eye on that wind up popping into view through the course of the tournament.
Yeah, it's the guys that we don't even know about right now, and they will make a big name for themselves. And Miller, I agree with you guys. I do think, speaking of him, I think it's ridiculous, if people are making death threats and now they got armed security with him and so forth. I mean, it's one thing to convict him in the court of public opinion or whatever, but to make actual threats and so forth, I think is ridiculous, but I think he's handled it well. So far, I tell you, Jamal Shedd of Houston, this kid, Marcus, I know he only averages a little over 10 points, five assists a game, but especially if Sasser is out for them, he's the one that's going to have the ball in his hands. We don't question Houston's defense and toughness and rebounding. They got to get the scoring, so I think Shedd is a really key piece for the Houston Cougars, right?
It's an interesting game today, too, with Northern Kentucky. It's a team that plays really tough zone defense. And if Sasser doesn't play, does Houston have enough scoring in the game? I mean, could it be really low scoring? But if they can – Houston already likes kind of a slow pace and aren't a great outside shooting team. So if they can really slow it down today, that's one that might be a little closer than you think.
Craig, on the Brandon Miller thing, I don't know which is dumber, making death threats and meaning it, or making death threats and not meaning it. You know what I mean?
Most like death threats are not meant, right?
If you're making a death threat, you're off your rocker to begin with. And then if you're doing it knowing you don't mean it, somehow that's kind of even dumber to me, because you're getting into trouble for something that you know you don't really mean. We live in such a weird time where we feel like the immediate response to something we don't like is to just say, well, that person should be killed or whatever. It's ridiculous. I don't like a lot of the things about that situation, but I'm not that focused on it that I'm going to get that caught up in it. And I also am not taken away from the fact that the guy's a phenomenal talent on the basketball court, even though I think he's done some stupid things in his personal life.
And Nados, I mean, people can say whatever they want to about him, but, I mean, he was saying, hey, these are things that our administration has seen. I mean, it's not just that Miller is claiming something or the coaches. I mean, evidently it's been out there and all the authorities have seen it. And so, you know, he's definitely going to be under the microscope, no question, Brad.
Doubt about that, for sure.
Yeah, no question.
By the way, Maryland has fought their way back in. They've got a lead now against West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia jumped on top. What, that game now Maryland led briefly. I think it's 22-22, whatever. Anyway, about a little over 5.5 minutes to go in the first half. And then Virginia, I know they scored, Mark, the first 8 points at least against Furman. Now that one is 12-7, Virginia with about 14.5 minutes to go in the first half. So play is underway. We got the Missouri game starting at 12:40 on TNT. If you're a Kansas fan, 1 o'clock on TBS to watch the Jayhawks today. Brandon Miller, Alabama, 1:45 on CBS this afternoon. San Diego State, College of Charleston, that game has received a lot of attention. That's at 2:10 on True TV. Matt's pick, Arizona, gets underway at 3:10 on TNT. And maybe, guys, the game of the day, Illinois-Arkansas, 3:30 on TBS. Marcus, any opinion on that one?
Yes, I like Illinois quite a bit. T.J. Shannon that played at Texas Tech. I think Arkansas this year, they're another one of these teams that if you look at them metrically, they are a horrible shooting, just like Mississippi State. It's not some of those Arkansas teams that had good players on it that are in the NBA now that could really heat up and shoot the basketball. This isn't that. So they're athletic, but it's a lot of raw kind of kids from high school that I think were considered to be really, you know, NBA type players that have a high, you know, ceiling, but right now they're not there. So I think Illinois wins that game against Arkansas today.
And then Brad, another 8-9 matchup at 5:50 on TNT, Auburn, Iowa. Any opinion on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I defer to someone like Mark that pays a lot closer attention to the regular season than I do in college basketball. I know that an 8-9 game is really, it's not going to be an upset either way. What I know about Auburn, I like them, but I also know that Iowa's had a really good year too. So that's one of those games where I sort of flip a coin and go, who do I think I'm going to pick in that game? I don't really know educatedly who to point to.
And, Mark, is Duke only a 6-point favorite against ORU?
That's
6-10 on CBS. Wow.
I think it's a little short, but still. Orr's got a good team. Got some tournament experience.
All right. And then Kelvin, Houston, a number one seed at 8:20 tonight on TNT. That's one of the highlights. And then, guys, one of the games of the day, number 7 A&M, 10 Penn State, 8:55 on TBS.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.